This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Cody Besson. Cody is CEO of Plains Cotton Growers, set to talk about the next farm bill. Will that be a 24 farm bill or a 25 farm bill? We'll find out in a moment. First off, Dr. Darrell Peel, Oklahoma State livestock economist on rebuilding.
We did see that early fall run, so we probably already moved a lot of the calves, but it, folks that hadn't, or possibly some of these stocker producers that had sort of stockpiled cattle on dry lot situations or whatever, now they know they're going to have some grazing. That may allow them to go forward, and you know, that can be straight up stocker and feeder cattle supplies, but it might also involve the potential for some heifers that ultimately are going to stay around for breeding purposes. So all in all, it gives us more flexibility.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Cody Besson. Cody is CEO, Plains Cotton Growers, headquartered in Lubbock. Before we get started and getting too deep in, Cody, let's start with kind of crop conditions, harvest update. What are you seeing right now?
Yeah, so in the last couple of weeks, it's kind of been a very unique process. We've had some rainstorms that have come to the area that have delayed harvest a little bit. We're very grateful for the rain, although we would have wished that we would have received it back early on in the springtime and summer when it was much more needed to finish out this crop year. But certainly we're very excited about being able to utilize that going into a new season. From a crop conditions and a cropping standpoint, we're probably around 65 to 70% completely off the stock, completely harvested within the entirety of the Southwest region, so Kansas all the way down from Oklahoma, Texas, through our service area. Unfortunately, this year is shaping up to be another pretty dire year. Yields have certainly not been as adequate as what most would have liked them to be, depicting on if it was dry land or even irrigated crops. There's a lot of investment in the crop that traditionally we have had with prices and with commodity inputs that have taken. From an overall ginning perspective, I would say most of the gins are running pretty full speed. Some have had to kind of slow down just a little bit because of the weather-related conditions, just due to a lack of production. But overall, I suspect that most will be done by Christmas time, if not the first couple of weeks within the new year, depending on what their overall production estimates are. But it has been a tough year again, unfortunately. And this is the third year going on a row, and so that makes it difficult not just for the producer but also for infrastructure alike, because they require volume in order to function, to be able to cash flow, just like a producer does. So we're trying to kind of be mindful of that. How do we mitigate that moving forward, developing some risk management tools moving forward that can be helpful for both the producer and infrastructure? Certainly it's been a key focus for the last couple of years. And then we'll just see how the rest of the year plays out, and then hopefully have a more prosperous 2025.
In the past, we've actually seen abandonment of fields a little earlier than we were seeing abandonment this year. Where are we again on the abandonment numbers? I know this would be a ballpark guess, and is there a reason why we're waiting a little later than maybe zeroing those out earlier in the season?
Yeah, so historically you'll see from an abandonment-based standpoint, at least within the High Plains and Southern High Plains of Texas, you'll see roughly about 70% of the total abandonment, not the total crop, but just total abandonment for the year, will be typically in the early growth stages of that crop. And then as we get through the regular growing season through, you know, July, August, September, October, we get into what's known as bull count season. So we're seeing more adjustments coming out right now where people are still finishing out some bull counts. Some of them just based on the RMA standards, have been unable to traditionally abandon that crop like they have in the past. Just because of the guarantee that's set out there. But from an overall abandonment standpoint, I would say we're probably about 60 to 65% of the total acres, if maybe not even a little bit more, within our service area that have probably been terminated from planting all the way through this now bull count season that we're in right now. Most of that's pretty well wrapped up. Those that still have some acres that are out there, they'll take them to harvest, or they are finishing out some minor adjustments. But for the most part, we're pretty well set on what the crop is like and what the production is going to be going into the end of this harvest season and into the ginning season as well. So.
Farm Bill, heard, I think it was Dr. Joe Outlaw with the Agriculture Food Policy Center at Texas A&M earlier in the year who said, we've never passed a farm bill in a presidential election year. And just kind of left that out there is doesn't mean it won't happen this year, but it is a presidential election year, and we still have no farm bill. Does it appear as though that trend will be broken?
Yeah. Outlaw has some very unique historical perspective, and certainly he's a much more scholar of that than most, as he's been very intricately involved in the development of these processes, just like other times, like our organization has. At least what it looks to be shaping up to be like on the farm bill front is trying to do an extension of the current bill with maybe some plus ups, so trying to incorporate some of the incremental increases in Title I provisions, so like a reference price or a marketing assistance loan, to beef those up, and then incorporating some of the improvements on the insurance title to help producers have better access to more risk management coverage, as well as the providers as well, to be more fluid in how they offer products to individuals as well. Still kind of is to be determined on how that shapes up toward the end of the year. There are a lot of ongoing discussions with leadership, with House Ag Committee, with Senate Ag Committee, and how that may transpire. But probably the more near-term and dire need, I would say, is economic assistance. That has really been on the forefront of a lot of producers' minds, as well as our organization, in pushing for trying to provide some immediate relief to producers and to help them as they go into refinancing from a cash flow standpoint. And then also pivoting and looking at the more long-term solutions with improvements to the farm bill and the overall safety net. And so there's a couple of moving parts on that. And then thirdly would be disaster-related assistance. So trying to provide some assistance by the end of the year for those impacted by recent hurricanes, tropical storms, drought, excessive heat, and other forms of Mother Nature-related incidents that have been transpiring across the U.S. for the last year or two.
Okay. Finally, as we just have a few days left for Congress in this session, we'll roll into 2025 and seat a new Congress early in the year. And then a couple of weeks after that, we have an inauguration and the next Trump administration. Already some names being mentioned. As Trump has announced who he plans to appoint to his cabinet. Brooke Rollins as Secretary of USDA, Lee Zeldin, the Administrator of EPA, and Jameson Greer as USTR. It seems like those three seem to be the big ones that ag has to focus on. Any thoughts on the administration before inauguration?
No, I think it's been kind of unique in the fact that President-elect Trump has been very aggressive about making announcements for his cabinet picks. It's probably from a strategic standpoint and rightfully and smartly so. He will have roughly 4 years to be able to carry out his administration and his policy initiatives that he is working on with his team and with the new Congress. And so he doesn't want to sort of be kind of sitting back on laurels or on heels and waiting on appointments to get confirmed. And so that's why he's made some of these big announcements, like the nominee for USDA Secretary of Ag, Brooke Rollins. She is a Texas A&M grad. She Grew up in an agricultural community, graduated from an agricultural school, certainly has some unique ties to that facet. We're still learning more about her background, and certainly am not concerned about her role and how she will be able to administer USDA as a whole. We look forward to working with her once she is confirmed, as well as the team that is propped up underneath her as undersecretaries and administrative roles and leadership as well. And I think it'll be a very unique situation in the fact that she'll be the first first person from Texas to serve in this type of capacity in a cabinet ever. And so there's a lot of history that's being made there as well. And you mentioned Lee Zeldin. Lee was a previous member of the U.S. House of Representatives, certainly as the nominee for the EPA administrator. That role will be very critical from a regulatory standpoint, much of which that we have been focused on and trying to get new labels for herbicide chemistry and other related chemistry that we need and within our toolbox as growers or as a grower-based group to combat weed resistance, insect resistance, things like that. And so that'll be very, very critical that they focus on that as well as the other purviews that come underneath that agency. And then he mentioned the USDR nominee. He previously served as the chief of staff underneath Robert Lighthizer, who negotiated quite a different amount of facets on trade deals. And so that'll be a big focus point on him as well as the new administration and what we're focused on as well on how do we enhance our trade portfolio? How do we enhance more and better robust trade deals? And so that way we can compete on a global atmosphere. But also to be mindful, too, from that balance overall, to make sure that we negotiate in strength, but also don't hinder our current market share and diminish some of the markets that we have today or diminish market prices that we have today in the overall strategic tactic they're going to take with these new roles. But we're excited about the nominees. They got to go through the confirmation process, which is a challenge, but it's not unattainable. They just have to be mindful of how the Senate dynamic will work, and hopefully they'll be confirmed very quickly. So then we can go to work. We can get to work on a big agenda. That's a very robust agenda as well.
Cody Besson is CEO of Plains Cotton Growers. Online, plainscotton.org. This is the Agribusiness Report.
Want to turn your truck into the ultimate workhorse or off-road beast? The possibilities are endless when you visit Rascal Supply Co. in Lubbock. Rascal has truck accessories, truck beds, bumpers, bed covers, lift kits, toolboxes, leveling kits, and so much more. Come see us at 10307 North U.S. Highway 87 or call 806-300-8007 for Rascal Supply.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton, the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Cody Besant with Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at deltapine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Want to turn your truck into the ultimate workhorse or off-road beast? The possibilities are endless when you visit Rascal Supply Co. in Lubbock. Rascal has truck accessories, truck beds, bumpers, bed covers, lift kits, toolboxes, leveling kits, and so much more. Come see us at 10307 North U.S. Highway 87 or call 806-300-8007 for Rascal Supply.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Cody Besson, online, plainscotton.org.
Are you planning on fence or brushwork on your ranch this fall and winter? West Texas Attachments has the skid steer attachments you need to make the job easier. Clear the way with their rock and brush grapple and drive posts quickly and accurately with the Montana Post Driver. They also have brush cutter shredders that turn your machine into a zero-turn mower that can handle trees up to 8 inches. West Texas Attachments also offers low-cost delivery to your area. Call Brad at 806-778-2834 or visit westtexasattachments.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
What are the world's largest and diverse collection of apple cultivars and genetic materials can be found at a USDA agricultural research station in New York State.
There's about 5,000 unique accessions that we keep here, and the composition really is 1,400 of those are named cultivars. So they have a unique history. They've been used in dessert or cider making. That's not very many. So the rest of them are these wild materials or hybrids that are like maybe not the thing you think of when you go to the grocery store, but our collection is uniquely wild.
Yet the collection's important. According to USDA geneticist Ben Gutierrez, is within its materials to develop future varieties.
It's what it's going to set apple breeding forward in the future. These are the unique disease resistance traits or fruit quality. So a lot of the novel flavors that we get in some of these apple hybrids come from these wild parents.
The collection also offers historical and cultural connections with its diverse worldwide representation. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.